Hello, I'm John Dennis. It's Thursday the 9th of April. Today, anger grows at the policing of the G20 protests after The Guardian reveals how officers attacked a bystander moments before he died.
It's up to the IPCC to decide where to take the investigation, but the video itself shows an assault, and so I don't think there's any doubt that there's a criminal element to it.
The Metropolitan Police are accused of repeating the mistakes of the Jean Charles de Menezes case.
It's virtually a repetition of the same kind of misinformation, again trying to turn public attention away from police conduct.
And a milestone in the battle against global warming, as a power plant in France is fitted with carbon capture and storage technology.
Carbon capture and storage is a suite of technologies which, with no exaggeration, some people claim is the thing that's going to save the world from climate change.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis on guardian.co.uk.
But now it's Bill Overton with the headlines and the papers.
Investigators will today begin questioning the police officer who came forward after a video showed him at the G20 protests assaulting a man who later died. The Territorial Support Group officer identified himself after the footage, obtained by The Guardian, shed more light on the death of Ian Tomlinson, a newspaper vendor who got caught up in the protests on his way home from work. The case is being handled by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, and the officer involved could face a manslaughter charge if a link is proved between the assault and Mr. Tomlinson's subsequent fatal heart attack. Meanwhile, an embarrassing security leak by a senior Scotland Yard commander has led to an anti-terrorist operation being hastily brought forward. 12 men have been arrested across the northwest of England after the blunder by Assistant Commissioner Bob Quick, Britain's most senior counter-terrorism officer. Earlier, he had arrived at 10 Downing Street for a briefing with a document marked secret clearly on show. Bob Quick has apologised for the incident, which has been described by opposition MPs as very alarming. An American cargo ship's reached the coast of Somalia after being recaptured by its crew from pirates. The attackers, though, are still holding the ship's captain hostage. Other American vessels are heading for the scene to try to help. It's the sixth time pirates have struck off the coast of East Africa in the past fortnight. US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the government is monitoring the situation closely and has urged the world to act together to end the scourge of piracy. Voting is in progress in Indonesia's parliamentary elections. A total of 38 national parties are in the running. The poll will decide who can stand for the Asian country's presidency later this year. Indonesia is the world's largest majority Muslim country, and analysts say the elections will show if politics there are becoming more Islamic. And aftershocks continue to hamper the rescue effort after Monday's earthquake in central Italy. A tremor measuring 5.2 on the Richter scale hit the area in the early hours and was felt as far away as Rome. The country's Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, already notorious for a series of gaffes made during the G20 summit, has been hit by fresh controversy after suggesting that those now living under canvas should think of themselves as being on a camping weekend. Let's take a look at the papers now, and they'll certainly make grim reading for the police again, with most leading on the security blunder which led to those arrests in the northwest. Terror chief in dossier debacle, says the Mail. The Mirror brands Bob Quick as top cop who lost the plot. The Daily Mirror claims to have more information about what the security operation was actually trying to prevent. The headline there is Terror Plot to Blow Up Top Footy Grounds, while the Mirror goes with the short but unequivocal PC plod. The Guardian continues to lead the way on the story about the death of Ian Tomlinson at the G20 protests. The paper carries an interview with his widow and quotes her words on the front page. When I close my eyes, I can't stop the video playing in my head. The Independent also continues to lead on this story, reporting that eyewitness claims riot police assaulted newspaper seller three times before he died near protest. The Express is the only paper to carry something completely different on its front page, telling us that thousands of rapists, killers and paedophiles will get the right to vote after ministers caved into pressure from Europe. The Express says that Justice Minister Michael Wills has agreed to European rules which would allow prisoners to vote in elections. Shadow Justice Secretary Dominic Grieve is quoted as saying, "Many people will question whether this is a sensible development. Civic rights go with civic responsibilities." Inside the Times, the row over MPs' expenses rumbles on with a report that Lib Dem leader Nick Clegg wants MPs to be forced to sell their second homes and return most of the profits to the taxpayer. Mr. Clegg says of the current situation, it's easy enough for MPs to talk about how the system should be changed, but what people want to know is what we're actually going to do about it. And finally, The Telegraph picks up on yesterday's story about Gordon Brown promoting an electric transport revolution. Its matte cartoon shows a man sitting in a car holding a balloon with the caption, "I rub the balloon on my jumper and the static electricity powers the car." More news and comment throughout the day at guardian.co.uk.
Ian Tomlinson, a 47-year-old newspaper vendor, died of a heart attack shortly after being struck and knocked to the ground by Met officers policing the G20 protests last Wednesday. A video of the incident was filmed by a passerby. It forms part of a dossier of evidence that the Guardian's handed over to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. The watchdog said yesterday it was upgrading the investigation into Mr. Tomlinson's death, taking over responsibility from the City of London Police, which is one of the forces involved in policing the G20 demonstrations.
The Independent Police Complaints Commission is to independently investigate the alleged assault by police on Ian Tomlinson shortly before his death. The investigation will also look into whether that contact may have contributed to his death. People are rightly concerned about this tragic death, and footage of the incident is clearly disturbing. We have been heavily involved in this investigation from day one, directing the City of London Police and liaising with Mr. Tomlinson's family. In light of new information, we have now taken the decision to independently investigate.
The IPCC has also ordered a second post-mortem examination, and it confirmed that the police officer filmed striking Mr. Tomlinson has come forward. But yesterday, more video footage of the incident came to light, and there were calls for a full criminal inquiry. The Liberal Democrats' justice spokesman, David Howarth.
On reflection, having looked at it several times, I suppose my reaction now is to feel more and more that it's an appallingly sad incident. Here's an innocent bystander just trying to look calm, trying not to be confrontational, and then just being attacked from behind.
What do you think about the reaction of Scotland Yard immediately after Mr. Tomlinson's death when they described what had happened?
Well, the first thing to say about that is they didn't say anything about what had actually happened. They gave the impression, by omission, that there'd been no encounter between police officers and Mr. Tomlinson before Mr. Tomlinson collapsed. Now, whether that's because officers on the ground didn't tell their seniors what happened, which is entirely possible, or whether they did tell them and they chose not to pass their information on, remains to be seen. That's one of the things that needs to be investigated.
The Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, has said that the Independent Police Complaints Commission will decide whether there's a need for a criminal investigation. What do you think about that?
Well, it's quite right for the Home Secretary not to interfere with the course of the investigation. She's acting quite properly in keeping out of it. The problem with what the IPCC proposed originally was that they would be using the City of London Police to carry out the investigation. And the City of London Police were obviously heavily involved on the day themselves in the policing of the demonstrations, and the whole thing happened on their patch. And so that was not satisfactory. That wasn't independent enough. And I was calling for a proper investigation right at the top end of what the IPCC does. It's up to the IPCC to decide where to take the investigation. But the video itself shows an assault, and so I don't think there's any doubt that there's a criminal element to it.
And would you like to see a wider review of police tactics at protests such as this?
Yes, indeed. There has to be a wider review of a whole range of things. First of all, the controversial tactic of kettling, which isn't just blockading demonstrations, though that's bad enough. I mean, that's of dubious legality, regardless of the view the police are putting around about what happened in the Oxford Circus case. The locking protesters in, as well as locking other people out, is only lawful where there's a proper, legitimate, proportionate purpose for doing so. And the footage of that tactic being used at the climate camp demonstration that I've seen shows officers using the edge of their riot shields in a way which is going to cause a tragedy someday if they carry on doing that. And that tactic really does have to be reviewed. But beyond kettling, there's also the question of the police's public relations strategy in the run-up to the demonstrations, the ramping up of the prospects of violence, and a strategy which it seemed to me that various elements of the media played along with, a kind of strategy of tension. And the police really do have to review that, because first of all, it always had the potential to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. But secondly, and by the day before the demonstration, senior police officers were themselves saying this to me, that there's a concern of theirs. There's a problem of losing control of junior police officers when that sort of ramping and hyping has taken place. And the third thing, of course, is the point we've already mentioned about the information that came out from the police about the Mr. Tomlinson incident, which has all the hallmarks of misleading spin, which was a big problem in the Menezes case, and it seems that no lessons have been learned from that.
David Howarth. Well, this is the first major crisis for Sir Paul Stevenson since he took over as Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. Helen Shaw is co-director of Inquest, which campaigns on deaths in police custody. I asked her if she thinks the Met has learned the lessons from the case of John Charles de Menezes, the innocent Brazilian man who was shot dead at Stockwell Tube Station in 2005.
No, I don't, because I think it's virtually a repetition of the same kind of misinformation, again trying to turn public attention away from police conduct. What needs to happen in this case is, and I think one of the things that's really concerning about it, is that there wasn't an independent investigation right from the beginning, given the context in which the death occurred.
Can you expand on that? Because obviously the Independent Police Complaints Commission is investigating the death. Do you think that they're not independent enough of the police?
The IPCC was set up because the previous body that investigated such deaths was so discredited because the police investigated themselves. And yet here we have a death occurring during a demonstration around a very high-profile event. And I think that what should have happened is that the IPCC should have instigated an independent investigation immediately, so that the public could, and the family could, have confidence in the investigation.
Helen Shaw, and there's full coverage at guardian.co.uk/G20. Also on The Guardian's website today, the gay friends Stephanie Theobald and Jake Arnott describe going straight together. guardian.co.uk/G2. These are a few of Barack Obama's favourite things. Esther Adley on the ultimate product placement at guardian.co.uk/America. And Charles Hazelwood addresses criticisms of British classical music and what is actually quite special about it. guardian.co.uk/arts. In France, a gas-fired power plant has been retrofitted with carbon capture and storage technology. Environment experts say the technology is critical to meeting climate change targets. Our environment correspondent, Alok Jha, explains how it works.
Carbon capture and storage is a suite of technologies which, with no exaggeration, some people claim is the thing that's going to save the world from climate change. What it tries to do is trap the gases coming out of power stations or factories which contain carbon dioxide, trap them, take the carbon dioxide out, and then bury that carbon dioxide underground. The idea being that instead of letting it out in the atmosphere where it can contribute to global warming, you're sort of storing it underground. Now, some people argue that it's a good thing because, you know, you could reduce something like 90% of the carbon dioxide that comes out of big power stations and factories. And that's a huge benefit, because something like 40 or 50% of the world's carbon dioxide comes from these sorts of sources. So the significance of this new thing is that it's the first time anyone's retrofitted, fitted onto an existing power station, the technology, this carbon capture and storage technology, which is very significant because you've already got thousands of coal-fired power stations around the world, and more are going to be built over the next 10 years. So you need some way of bolting this stuff on to existing power stations.
When are we going to get this in Britain?
Well, it's a vexed question. All the bits of carbon capture and storage, the idea of actually trapping the carbon dioxide in the first place, transporting it and then burying it, all these things are proven technologies. Oil companies do them all the time. What's not really happened before before last year, in fact, in Germany, is that no one's put these things together. And then here in Lac, in the south of France, they're going to put them together again, but onto an existing power station. In Britain, the technology exists, but the government wants to fund it in a very peculiar way. It's running a competition to say to all the power stations, right, one of you are going to get hundreds of millions of pounds from us to build a demonstration plant. Around the world, lots of people are building these demonstration plants. And so what they've done is to say, we're going to give you this money, but you have to tell us exactly how you're going to do it and everything. And that's just taken years and it's been delayed. And whilst that's happening, the rest of the world's just racing ahead. So in the UK, the earliest we'll get this, a demonstration, which is not even going to be a full-size thing, probably about 2015, something like that.
And will this power plant in France put extra pressure on the government to speed things up a bit?
Well, you'd hope it would, but it probably wouldn't. It won't, because the government here are kind of committed down their road. In a few weeks, the UK government will announce its plans for how to fund bigger projects. Every government in the world knows it has to do this, every single one. But I think that there's a bit of a hoop-link first thing going on, because it's so expensive to do the very first one that no one wants to pay for the first one. So the first one will cost $10 billion or something ridiculous like that. The second one will cost one. So whoever does the first one has to pay, fork that out. And kind of the governments know they have to do it. Oil companies know they have to do it, but none of them want to be the first. So they're all kind of prevaricating slowly. And this should push the government forward, the UK government, but it's unlikely to. Alok Jha.
Comedian Jo Brand hit the headlines last year after she complained about Carol Thatcher's use of the word gollywog backstage at the BBC. The Guardian's Hannah Poole asked Jo Brand if she was surprised at the reaction.
No, because I kind of think it fitted into the sort of press agenda of things happening at the BBC, which were unpalatable in some way. I mean, not to me, but, you know, well, obviously Carol Thatcher was, but, like, the language thing and the sort of tasteless jokes thing and the Jonathan Ross thing. So I suspect that anything of that ilk would have been picked up fairly quickly. So I wasn't surprised by it. I was kind of a bit surprised by the backlash, you know, because I felt that it was turned round to kind of make me look a bit like I was on a personal crusade to destroy her career. Because apparently there was talk of something going into the papers about me actually saying I couldn't get her mother, but I'm going to get her. Which, you know, it's just not the sort of way I operate, really.
It surprised you? Did it surprise you? Did it surprise you to hear her say it?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, it shocked me. Yeah, it doesn't shock me that someone like her would use language like that. It shocked me that she would use it in the place that she did use it, you know. That she would be silly enough to do that in public.
So some people were saying, oh, but you know, you're offensive all the time.
Oh, yeah, and I swear and I say all men should be killed and stuff like that. Yeah, but I think there's an enormous difference which people just do not understand, you know, that kind of racism, as far as I'm concerned, and any kind of language that surrounds it or attitudes that demonstrate that you are racist, in my book, are absolutely taboo and always have been, you know.
There's quite a lot of talk, it pops up every so often, about men and women in terms of humour, and every so often some man pops up and says, there are no funny women.
Yeah. Yeah, normally a very irritating man.
Normally Christopher Hitchens or someone.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think that statement probably says more about them than it does about women comics, really.
What's your worst heckle?
One of the worst gigs I ever had was quite early on. I was doing Jonglers. Do you know Jonglers? It's kind of not really my kind of thing. And it had a real sort of, you know, in the 80s, it had a real kind of yuppie sort of feel about it.
And there was Scampi a lot in a basket.
Yes, exactly, and City Boys all. Well, there was a table of dentists sitting at the front, or about 12 of them, all really, really pissed. And one of them got on the table, slapped his knob out and shouted, suck my cock, you fucking bitch. And I thought, this is this is too much. I'm not putting up with this. I got off, and then I got told off for coming off 2 minutes early. So I didn't do Jonglers after that.
Joe Brand talking to Hannah Poole. And Joe Brand is one of the judges in a new reality TV series called The Speaker. That's on Tuesday at 8 o'clock on BBC Two. Phil Maynard and Doug Hardy produced today's edition of Guardian Daily. I'm John Dennis. Thank you for listening.